Thanks for listening to the Hit That Line Podcast Network. You can now download our new app in the iTunes or Google Play Store. Listen anytime and anywhere on your favorite mobile device. Just search Hit That Line now. Subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network.
This podcast is powered by the pros at Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric. Arkansas owned, Arkansas operated. GoPascal.com.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
I'm always high on the hogs, guys. I'm high. Well, I'm not high right now, but my day is young.
My odometer's way up there. I'm that 2018 that's already got 130,000 miles on it.
The Razorbacks rush across the field to get that boot.
Tommy, Chuck, and Ty, you guys are the gold standards of sports talk radio.
He bleeds to Arkansas.
Ty's got good hair.
Hopefully Tommy gave it his best shot this weekend. Have you gotten an update on how they concluded?
I'm sure if they'd won, we'd know.
I know. That's where I was thinking. Luckily, he was at least riding in style, thanks to our friends at Arkansas Golf and Power Sports. He is not kidding. He actually does have a cool golf cart. And my friends have even said the same thing. It's awesome. They can take care of not just if you need a golf cart for driving around the neighborhood. Maybe you're a golf pro listing. They service all makes and models as well. They've got a location in Fayetteville and Little Rock. ARPowerSports.com. That's ARPowerSports.com. Again, his Arkansas Razorback golf cart is awesome. I would guess that he was rocking it this weekend, making sure he was telling everyone where he got it. Again, ARPowerSports.com. That's Arkansas Golf and Power Sports. Yeah, I tend to think like you, Chuck. If he didn't text you or me their final tally from the weekend, it probably was not good. But maybe I'm wrong.
Or maybe he just wanted to get away and didn't think it was any of our business.
That could be the case, too. You could be right on that. Well, it was quite interesting. A couple golf things I want to note this morning, and then we'll talk some baseball with what's going on in Omaha at the College World Series, and a Razorback tie-in as well. Not at the Travelers, but something that an Arkansas Razorback was able to accomplish in Ireland, of all places, which is pretty cool, at the Ballyliffin Golf Club, which is... I was looking at the pictures. It's pretty great. So the Travelers in Cromwell, Connecticut this weekend. Scottie Scheffler, Chuck, he wins his sixth PGA event of the year. He's got 12 in his career, so half of them have come in this year alone. But the story was not necessarily how it concluded, which was epic. Him and Tom Kim went to a playoff hole, and it was awesome. But these protesters on 18 that were protesting climate change, I've seen this happen like in various other parts of the world, but not at a U.S. sporting event, to my knowledge. And for this to, I mean, it really took precedent over the great golf that we actually saw down the stretch, which was fun, but it kind of got put on the back burner a little bit.
You know, I'm old enough to remember streakers. You know, you'd have a sporting event, there'd be a streaker. Somebody run out there, and I kind of put these folks in the same category, and so I don't know how much was accomplished yesterday, but yeah, that's I guess what people are talking about. Maybe that was the objective, but you know, Scottie Scheffler didn't seem to be bothered too much by it.
Nope, he did not. Wins again.
Scottie Scheffler comes out of the chaos in Connecticut with another tournament title.
Now, he's the first to win six events before July since Palmer did in 1962. It sounds like he's not going to compete until the Open next month. He's been awesome, but he almost didn't win. For those that maybe didn't get a chance to watch it this weekend, maybe you were doing something, Tom Kim was literally like maybe 6 inches away from eagling out on 18 and winning the whole thing.
After a lot of encouragement from Paul Tesori, he does just what he asked. Almost jarred it.
Chuck, if you watch this highlight, I mean, he was...
I did see it.
Yeah.
It was a great shot.
And he ends up putting it and putting it to a playoff.
He knows it. He knew it all the way.
Unfortunately for Tom, Scottie does what he does and ends up winning the whole thing. But just so much going on, like, at the end of that round, in the end of Sunday, it was hard to, like, just keep track of everything. In addition to that, you obviously had the College World Series going on, but... it was a great ending to that tournament.
It was certainly something that was dramatic. There's no doubt about it. There was some dramatic golf right there. And as you said a little bit earlier, you had some people running out on the course. So kind of had everything there at the end.
Yeah. Other golf news. This is Arkansas related. Congrats to Jacob Olson, who defeated the Englishman Dominic Clemens to win the amateur championship. I know that's pretty cool. Chuck, he qualifies now for the Open next month, U.S. Open. And he has an invitation to play in the Masters tournament as well. So for a Razorback, and the second one, actually, with Mateo Fernandez de Oliveira last year, he's getting a chance to compete next month in one of the creme de la cremes of golf.
Oh, he's a great player. And they've had a lot of them come through here, and I'm sure they'll have more. And to win a tournament like that in international, you know, a lot of them do compete internationally. They're in international competitions. And you know, I think about collegiate golfers and, you know, where they play, and, you know, the rest of us are trying to get through winter in January, and they're playing over in Hawaii, or they're playing at Myrtle Beach or somewhere like that. And these kids play all over the world, and there are so many great players. My gosh, I mean, all you've got to do is just, you know, you played highlights a moment ago from those two players, Tom Kim and Scotty Scheffler. You know, as great a player as Scottie Scheffler is, he's not a household name. And you can be a golf fan and never have heard of Tom Kim. So there are just so many great players out there. And, you know, to have some of our guys' names mentioned in terms of the winners, is that's exciting and good for them.
Yeah, excited for him. And this is kind of how it went down again. It's over in Ireland. We were talking about great – you're talking about great places that are played. And – this is kind of how it went down at the tail end.
It's on its way, and it is near dead. And destiny for Denmark. Jacob Skov-Olesen has won the 2024 Amateur Championship, the first Dane in history to do so. Congratulations, and welcome to the most prestigious winner's circle of all.
That's some serious golf clapping right there, man. Listen to the – play that again. Listen to the gallery clap.
It's on its way, and it is near dead.
Listen.
And destiny for Denmark. Jacob Skov-Olesen has won the 2024
Amateur Championship. Some serious golf clap.
The first Dane in history to do so. Congratulations, and welcome to the most prestigious winner's
circle.
Well,
that is a golf gallery.
Yeah, and for Olesen, who you just mentioned, the first Danish player to do it for him. Again, not just the Razorback time, but I know the significance for his country is pretty cool. So, again, he wins the amateur championship, so he has the invite to the Open this next month, the U.S. Open, and then also the Masters tournament. I know that, again, the Masters is something that Tommy, again, loves. We always talk about, if you could be a professional, what would you do? And he says that. But there is something pretty significant, Chuck, about next month. I can't remember where the Open is, but I know that tournament, just the heritage and the tradition with the Open being, I think, one of the longest, if not the longest, golf tournaments, is a huge deal for golfers, especially on the other side of the pond, basically.
Well, it's a major, obviously. I like it because I like to watch it in the morning. It's one of my favorite tournaments as a spectator. And by spectator, I mean a guy that watches it on television. I like it. I enjoy watching it. And the people there will tell you it's the only Open. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of the way they view it, and they treat it that way.
Speaking of the other side of the pond, Chuck, I don't know if you paid attention to what's going on in Paris and in preparation for the Olympics next month, but I'm not a big Olympics guy. I don't know about you. I like to watch the U.S. compete and stuff, watch them beat Bolivia, I guess it was, yesterday in Dallas in Copa America. But apparently there's some protest around where they're going to be swimming in the CN, or however you say it. They spent France spent $1.5 billion on this rather than doing other stuff that the city needs. And so there's a lot of, like, pushback on that. Also, Paris has this environmental plan, or I guess France has this environmental plan where they're not providing AC to certain units. So the United States is bringing AC units across the pond for their own athletes, just to to keep them, I guess, ready for events and stuff. But those were two kind of things I was laughing at and kind of following the what's going on with potential Razorbacks that are qualifying as well.
You know, one of the things that I've always been interested to see over the years, and this kind of has something to do with what you're talking about there, but you look at some of these Olympic venues 20 years after the Olympics are there, what happens to them?
Yeah.
A lot of times they end up in ruin, frankly. And or they end up as a facility that's used for sometimes things other than sports. And they do spend a lot of money. And look, I don't understand the business of the Olympics, but I do understand it's a business. And they spend a lot of money. And over the years, evidently, a lot of money changed hands illegally in order to get these games. So clearly they're profitable. But cities will essentially sell their souls to get them. And, you know, again, I don't understand the business enough to know if it's worth doing that. But a lot of them make that decision to do it. And Paris has, and everybody will act like it's the most important thing in the world for 2 weeks.
See, that's an event, Chuck, that I would like to go to if it's in the States. But I don't have this huge desire to go, like Alyssa, for example. Alyssa Orange with Pigtrail Nation is going to cover it for Nextstar. I don't have a huge desire to go unless it's here. Like World Cup, for example. And the World Cup comes here in, I guess, 2026, I believe that's right, in North America. I'm excited about that, but I wouldn't necessarily travel across the country or go to another country to go watch it. That's kind of my viewpoint on those two events.
Well, if you had a family member, obviously you would, or if you had some rooting interest. It wouldn't be at the top of my list just in terms of a fan. But, you know, if I was a rabid track and field fan, for example, or if I was a rabid fan of a sport where, you know, it was an international competition. You know, the best teams in the world sometimes weren't in the United States. You're a soccer fan, if you pay attention to all that stuff, you know, probably a trip like that would be great. But now for me, I follow Major League Baseball, the NFL, and college sports. There's not a great appeal for me, but that doesn't diminish the magnitude of it just because, you know, some guy like me doesn't find everything they do appealing. Here's the thing about the Olympics, whether it's the Summer Olympics or the Winter Olympics. They do a great job of marketing this. The reason we're talking about it right now is because NBC is already talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
They already are throwing in subtle hints in everything they do. I mean, they've been talking about the U.S. Olympic golf team during all these golf tournaments that have been on, during the U.S. Open, like anybody was thinking about it until they brought it up. But by the time we get there, there's been so much buildup that storylines develop. And we pay attention to, and I think, for example, in women's track, they've got some personalities there that are going to capture the imagination of the sports world for a couple of weeks. And I think there are some other sports where there are always personalities that people latch onto during that 2 week period. And it happens in the Summer Olympics and it happens in their Winter Olympics too. We talk about curling in the winter for 2 weeks and it never comes up again for another four years. And then we talk about it for 2 weeks. So, yeah, storylines develop, but I don't think for the average American sports fan who watches SportsCenter, who listens to sports talk radio, I don't know that those people are necessarily moved by the Olympics. If their teams play, and I guess when the Olympics occur in the summer, unless you're a real big baseball fan, there's not going to be real competition in terms of viewers. But if you're a big fan of a particular baseball team and you've got ace versus ace going that night, you'll probably watch that before you'll watch the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
The other night, you'll probably watch the Olympics. But it's I enjoy watching it, and I know I went off a whole lot on whether or not that lake's going to be clean for him, but I'll bet it is.
So the Parisians are threatening to throw poo in the river to protest the cost of the Olympics and everything.
Well, it's just going to cost more to get all that cleaned up before the competition.
Well,
so That's a little self-defeating.
Apparently, Chuck, it's not the mayor. I forget what they call it over there, but she was saying, well, I'll prove to you it's clean by swimming in it. And she hasn't done it just yet because there's like E. coli and some other bacteria issues because they're trying to clean out, I guess, some of the sewage stuff that was connected somehow, some way. But
they'll get it worked out. There are always things like this that happen ahead of the Olympics. There are always groups that protested being there. Generally, it revolves around cost. But these things happen all the time. And in our society now, you can't have a big event like this. You can't even apparently have a golf tournament without people protesting. So I wouldn't read too much into it.
And I was looking, when I was reading the environmental plan trying to keep it between 73 and 79 degrees, I was thinking about when I move in, hopefully, knock on wood, to this house next month, what I'm going to keep my thermostat at. Chuck, I was thinking during winter, 68 degrees, during summer, 72. Is that going to keep my cost at a decent price, or what are you thinking? As a man that's owned many houses, what do I need to do?
I like a little warmer home.
Okay.
That's as I age. Your blood slows, man.
Okay.
I like a little bit warmer than a lot of people do. I don't think my thermostat ever gets into the 60s, winter or summer. I can guarantee. That's why you work, so you can be comfortable in the house. If you're buying or selling a home, Weicker Realtors, the Griffin Company, is the name you need to remember. They've been my partner. They're Ty's partner now. And whether you're a first-time home buyer or, you know, whether you've been doing this your whole life, it's nice to have a relationship with someone, and that's a relationship that you build over time. It starts with trust, and it really begins with communication. They've got to understand your needs, whether it's your first time out or whether you've become seasoned at this. You want someone on your side of the table who's, first off, the best trained in the business, and that's always what you get with Weicker Realtors, the Griffin Company. You want somebody that's ingrained in the community. Somebody's not just selling a home. Somebody's not just helping you find a house. Somebody that's been there for a while. Someone that takes part in community events. Someone that's there, present. And that's what you find with Weicker Realtors, the Griffin Company. That was my experience, and I think it'll be yours as well. Now, they've got offices in Northwest Arkansas. They're in Washington and Benton counties. They're in Fort Smith, Branson, and you can always log on to WeikerGriffin.com.
Real quick before we move on to baseball, a couple texts here on the McLarty-Daniel hotline. Wyatt and Peeridge reminding us that the U.S. is hosting the 2028 Olympics is something to look forward to. And Allen says that apparently Oklahoma City is getting a couple events. Don't know that to be 100% accurate or not, but hopefully that's the case, because that's an easy – if that's the case, Chuck, that's an easy drive for a lot of listeners.
Hey, I will say this. They have the Olympic swimming trials, I noticed, in Indianapolis. Not this past weekend, but the weekend before, I think. And they basically filled up. It was the largest crowd to have ever seen the Olympic trials.
Kalen Clark was there, yeah.
And I can remember when they would have this in Omaha at the Quest Center, as it was known then, and it would coincide with the College World Series. Don't kid yourself. There were more people at that swimming event than there were at the College World Series. It was huge. Now, it's not that way now, but it was back then. It was a huge – I mean, Michael Phelps was there.
Oh, wow.
There was nobody at the College World Series that was a bigger star than Michael Phelps. I can assure you of that. So that's a big, big deal. You talk about people going to the Olympics and whether you'd travel abroad to do it. Again, it just kind of goes back to what moves the needle for you.
Well, the baseball game 3 tonight is going to move the needle. Is Texas A&M or Tennessee is going to walk away with the trophy later on tonight. Charlie Condon walked away with the Golden Spikes this weekend. Not really a surprise there. Chuck, in game 1, Texas A&M got on Tennessee early and really put the clamps on. Then in game 2, they're up 1-0, and you're thinking, man, they might win this thing in 2 games, and then Tennessee's bats got hot. And now it's a game 3, which if I had to choose, I'd rather, it go to game 3. I hope A&M still wins it tonight. They've still got, Ashenoff is the kid's name, their outstanding closer, or Ashenbeck, excuse me, is their outstanding closer and relief guy that they can use tonight. I know that what Schlossnagel got questioned, why they didn't play him last night, and he thought about that a little bit. I thought he gave a decent answer, but it's all decided later on tonight on ESPN.
Well, I don't think coming into this anyone really thought it would do anything other than go to 3 games. I mean, I was a little surprised it wasn't the other way around. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought Tennessee might win game one and Texas A&M would come back and win game two, but happened the other way. I don't think, you know, when you look at both these teams, the idea that one was going to take two straight from the other, neither side's that much better than the other. So I'm not surprised. And, you know, you look at the scores of games, this idea that, you know, you bring a closer in when you're down 4-1, that's not what a closer does. So I don't understand the pushback on that. That's from somebody that doesn't know the game. But Texas A&M's got arms left, and Tennessee's got enough left, and hey, they'll battle it out tonight. And who knows if it'll be 13-10 or, you know, 2-1. But the issue with A&M last night was one run's not going to beat anybody. You know, you're not going to win with one run. So they can question pitching decisions all they want. But I'll guarantee if Jim Schlossnagel going into the ballgame last night had been told you're going to hold Tennessee to 4, he'd have said, we got a good chance to win this thing tonight. And, you know, Tennessee's pitcher shut him down.
Yeah, they. It was
pitching, I guess, not just one.
Yeah, it was a good performance from Tennessee staff. The bats again. Tennessee, I guess, was 0-16 with runners on base until the seventh inning, I believe, and then they finally got it going down the stretch with a couple key hits last night.
That ball is hammered, and that may end the zero. It is gone.
So Tennessee, again, takes game two. Later on tonight at 6 o'clock, we'll see who ends up pulling it out. You think about, so, Chuck, they both have been to the College World Series before, the Aggies and the Volunteers, but Tennessee's been the last 3 of 4. Texas A&M has been the last 2 of 3, and it's not just making it. It's the length of time they've actually spent there these last couple years. I mean, Schlossnagel's done a great job in the short amount of time in College Station, and I know it pains Arkansas fans, some Arkansas fans to hear, but Tony's done a great job in Knoxville as well.
Well, and Schlossnagel took TCU to 4 straight.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, one of them's going to win it tonight.
And the other,
have to give him credit.
And you brought this up, I believe, last week, and I remember this is something you just have to keep an eye on with the Texas job potential. I know that both those guys have at least been mentioned. Don't know if there's any truth to it or not. But you do have to wonder between them two and maybe Jay Johnson as well, who would potentially take that Texas job, that head coaching position with them entering the league, because we're a week away from Texas and Oklahoma, I guess, joining the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Texas's thought is on that. I've not followed it. I've not heard much about it either, which might lead you to believe the guys thereafter, you know, are still busy. Who knows? So I know it's a good job, maybe not as good as it once was, but it's still one of the elite jobs in college baseball.
Mm-hmm. Curious to see who ends up taking it moving forward. All right, so we got more baseball to discuss. Former Red Sox, Nationals, and Phillies pitcher Jonathan Papelbon is going to join us on the other side. We'll get his take on Hagen Smith, Paul Skenes, some stuff going on in the Major League as well.
Call or text the McLarty Daniel Hotline at 877-377-6963. McLarty Daniel, a vehicle for every lifestyle.
When you're looking for a new car, you want to shop for a vehicle you love with an organization you trust. You've probably heard that McLarty Daniel means making deals, but what I'm inspired by the most is that McLarty Daniel means making a difference in our community. When you buy a vehicle with McLarty Daniel, you reinvest right here in the community, in our schools, in our little leagues, in our food banks, and our people. So you're not just making a purchase, you're making a difference too. Come see us at any of our 6 locations in Northwest Arkansas.
BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right to all the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
Hey, this is Jonathan Papelbon, 2007 world champ with the Boston Red Sox, Red Sox Hall of Famer, six-time All-Star, Phillies all-time saves leader, and Red Sox all-time saves leader.
Jonathan Papelbon takes over in the top of the eighth inning. Two out, nobody on. One swing, he could put Colorado back on top, and Holiday is picked off. Helton strikes out, one away. Into center field, Ellsbury is there for the second out. Red Sox trying to take the first two here at home. And they do. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Red Sox Hall of Famer, Jonathan Papelbon.
And we welcome you back into hour number two of the Morning Rush, where we have a unique perspective this morning. It's Zachwist, Jonathan Papelbon, who joins us coming up in just a bit. It is a Hot Take Monday to the McLarty Daniel Hotline. We go where we welcome in Jonathan Papelbon. Jonathan, I do have some major league stuff to ask. We got some current Razorbacks that I know they're going to be drafted probably high in this MLB draft, but I want to start with your college playing days, which you don't get asked about as much. Mississippi State Bulldog. What do you remember about playing in Bomb Walker Stadium, man?
Well, I remember, you know, obviously the fans there being loud, but, you know, it was very comparable to Duty Noble Field and going to play at the Dude, you know. So I always thrived in those type of atmospheres. So, you know, playing in the SEC and, you know, going and playing in front of those crowds were something that I always loved. But I believe during my time, I think we took y'all pretty good back in the day. Arkansas baseball wasn't quite what it is today.
It really has come on, because I guess you were drafted in 2005. I want to tie in later on in the program what's going on at hockey with what happened with some of your teammates the year before with Boston, the ALCS. But you mentioned in kind of the prominence of Arkansas, but not just Arkansas, SEC baseball. I know your alma mater won a few years back. You've got an SEC, all-SEC College World Series. Jonathan, from 20 years ago to now, how much improvement have you seen in the sport in this conference, particularly in the West?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, night and day. But, you know, I think the biggest thing nowadays that's changed the whole landscape is the NIL deals. You know, obviously it's great for the athlete. It's great for everybody that's incorporated into it. But I think that, you know, it's become quite the wild, wild west, and I'm not on any kind of committee to solve this problem, but, you know, the SEC stood alone back then when I played, and now I think they 100% stand alone, and now you're going to look at, like, you know, these major conferences, the two big major conferences, basically, eventually is what it's going to get to, I believe. But, yeah, man, Arkansas was also awesome to play at, man. Ball Walker Stadium goes off.
Yeah, it was. It's a fun atmosphere even today. You probably, if I had to guess, kind of that time frame when you were playing, matched up against Nick Schmidt. So there was probably some compelling battles back in the day. If I had to guess, they've got a lefty now. So that Nick actually just had his record broken by Hagen Smith this season. He was a finalist for the Golden Spikes. It goes to Charlie Condon. Jonathan, you know what it takes to pitch in the majors. You're a guy that had a lot of success, World Series champ, All-Star. I mean, the accolades go on and on. Maybe what you can tell us about this kid Hagen and his prospects at the next level with his slider and other major league stuff.
Yeah, well, I've watched the Hagen kid pitch quite a bunch, actually. And obviously he has big league caliber stuff. There's no question about it. To me, the hardest part to gauge on these kids nowadays is the mental side of it. You know, how hard does this kid work? When you put his back against the wall, what happened? When you put 40,000 people in the stands, what happened? Those are all the intangibles that you can't really read. But the Hagen kid, man, as far as being a lefty, he goes out there, he controls the game. And when you look at a young kid, for him to be able to go out there and control the game, what I mean by control the game is the pace is on him. Everything about the game that he pitches in is based upon what he does.
Yeah, he's
a fun kid to watch.
I would best. We're talking with Jonathan Papelbon, World Series champion, All Star. I mean, list goes on and on. Also, former Mississippi State Bulldog. Does he have an advantage being a lefty, Jonathan? I know you as a righty. There's less, not less of an advantage, but does he have an advantage at the next level being a lefty? Something that MLB batters don't see as regular as righties.
Yeah, there's no question about that. They are the prized piece of jewelry for any pitching staff, man. Lefties are an item that, you know, when they come along, you grab them up. And that's another reason why I feel like this guy's going to go quick in the draft. And, you know, hopefully he can go to the major leagues and go, or obviously he's going to go to the minor leagues first, but mm-hmm. go to the minor leagues, develop a little bit more, but then eventually get to the major leagues and be able to, you know, go on a path that's, you know, best for him, and he can go out there and, you know, put Arkansas on the map.
Yeah, Arkansas's had some draft success. They're hoping to add some more. You kind of mentioned the transition from the minors there to the majors. One guy that hasn't had much of a problem with that is Paul Skeens thus far. What have you watched from that rookie? And Jonathan, is he a realistic all-star candidate for the National League this year?
Of course. Yeah. Look. Realistically, anybody can make the All-Star team with the fans voting this year. that's the one thing I hate about the All-Star game is, there were years where I was on the All-Star team that I felt, maybe I should have. And then there were years where I was on the All-Star team. I wasn't on the All-Star team that I was like, man, there's no way I shouldn't be. So it's a kind of a tough deal. When you have the fans voting, I think that only the players should vote. But I think he's a candidate. I mean, anybody's a candidate nowadays. But if it was me, you know, he'd have to have a little bit more on the put up a little bit more yet. I mean, he is throwing the ball great. There's no question about it. But a Major League All-Star is a different category.
Yeah. We'll stay in the NL Central for a sec, Jonathan. This is Cardinal country in Arkansas. I know Mississippi probably had a couple different franchises that different people in Starkville or Oxford or Jackson kind of flocked to. But I would say this was predominant Cardinals country.
Yeah, Mississippi's predominantly either, well, North Mississippi goes to the Cardinals and South Mississippi more goes to Atlanta.
Okay. Your thoughts on a team that's now above 500 in Pittsburgh's division? What have you thought about what they've done the last handful
of
games?
I'll tell you what's surprised me about St. Louis is they're determined not to go anywhere. I mean, they're determined to turn last year around. You know, last year was a horrible season for them. And, you know, what I see in them is they've got some fight left. You know, they're not as bad as people were expecting to be this year. They've had new guys rise to the occasion. And, we'll see what happens. But they're turning it around, I will say. Have they completely turned it around? No.
But they're in the right direction. Jonathan, a few more questions before we let you go. Again, Jonathan Papelbon is our guest on the McLarty Daniel Hotline, All-Star, World Series champ, Red Sox Hall of Fame member. To transition back to college, we got a game 3 tonight. We also got a game 7 in hockey, which I want to tie into baseball just a bit. But who you got tonight, man? You got the pitching of A&M or you got the hitting of these Tennessee Volunteers?
Man, that is a tough. It honestly, to me, it's a coin toss. It really is. I'm sure Vegas will probably have Tennessee favored by. I think the run line will probably be about a run and a half, maybe something like that. But Yeah, I do like Tennessee. My son likes Tennessee. I like A&M. We obviously watch
Split
Household a lot. Well, yeah, we both wanted Mississippi State to win their regional, but they didn't do that. So now I'm probably pulling for A&M just because they're the colors of Mississippi State, and he's pulling for Tennessee. So I just can't stand Tennessee's colors, man. They just drive me nuts, and just never have liked Tennessee.
I think you're in kin with Arkansas fans listening right now. Not that they like the Aggies either, but definitely.
Yeah. So it's a hard one to pull for, but I definitely think Tennessee has more of the firepower, you know, if you want to call it that. The more high draft picks, I think, are going to come out of Tennessee with what all they have. I don't know, man. I'll tell you who will win will be the team that makes the least amount of errors. If you go back to college baseball for a long, long time, it's always been that way. Pitching and defense is always usually one. And when Mississippi State won it all, they went through the entire College World Series without making an error. And that was a big reason for their success. You look at last year, LSU, what did they do? They did not make but one or two errors, I think, during the whole College World Series. So that's how you win.
One more college question before we wrap it up, Jonathan. Oklahoma and Texas entering the Southeastern Conference. We'll keep it at baseball. I know you probably monitor what Mississippi State's going to be doing with Jeff Lebby in football as well. But your thoughts on the Sooners and Longhorns entering a league that you were a part of and how it bolsters the College Baseball Conference even more?
Yeah, I mean, it's only going to make it better. It's only going to make the conference more competitive. And like I said earlier, you know, I think we're coming to that situation where you're only going to have those two big conferences, you know, going at it. What kind of sucks to me, though, is the only thing is that, like, playing in the SEC, there's going to be some schools that you probably eventually won't even play, you know, on the roster that year. It's going to get to that. You have so many teams, you know. And if you're good, you may not play them to, like, the championship or something like that. So it's going to make it a little bit tougher, but obviously the fans will love it.
Jonathan, we just got a text here on the McCarty-Daniel hotline from JT in Hot Springs. He is a giant Red Sox fan, and he wants to thank you for your contributions in 2007. Our afternoon host is also a big Red Sox fan, so he wanted to pass along that as well.
Awesome, man. Red Sox nation's everywhere, brother.
Even in Arkansas. So, Jonathan, last thing before we let you go, we appreciate you joining us. You were part of the Red Sox organization in 2005. The year before, they came back against the Yankees in the ALCS, one of the most dramatic finishes in really major league history. You've got a game 7 in the NHL tonight with the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers. I wonder from your vantage point, I know you technically weren't on the team, but just talking with a lot of your teammates a year later, what did it take to come all the way back? And do you think that Edmonton's going to do it tonight for the first Canadian win in the Stanley Cup since, I guess, 93?
I do think Edmonton's going to do it tonight. Yes, because the momentum is just too much. And I've been watching. And you know, as far as when you get to these game sevens or any kind of point like this into a season, it's one inning at a time. It's one period at a time. You know, you have to really, really simplify and slow down things, and the guys and the team that can do that are the ones that usually come on top. So, man, I don't know. I'm looking for Edmonton.
I think you might be onto something there. And based on what a lot of your teammates did the year before you got there, I'd say that's and when you got that momentum going, it's hard to stop. Even like it was in Yankee Stadium, then it is in Florida's arena tonight. We'll see if they can pull off the uncommon, or I say, because that's saying it at the lightest case. Well, Jonathan, we appreciate you joining us again. Jonathan Papelbon, been our guest, 2007 World Series champion, All-Star, Red Sox Hall of Fame, amongst his other accolades. Good stuff, man. Hopefully we'll have a great...
Okay, man. I'll keep in touch with you on Twitter, man. Stay in touch on Twitter, brother.
Yeah, you got it, brother. Again, good stuff from Jonathan. And Chuck, I love how immediately off the bat, he was like, yeah, competitiveness in Bob Walker back today. It was like the dude, man. He had good things to say about when he came to Bomb Walker. I guess it would have been Bomb Stadium back then.
Yeah. I remember him. I remember when he pitched for Mississippi State and called their game or called our games then, and he was good then. Sometimes, though, you look at pitchers now after a lengthy major league career, and it was a storied career as a major leaguer. I don't know that as a collegian you look at a guy like that and say, hey, this guy's going to be a 10-year guy. This guy's going to be an all-star. This guy's going to win a World Series. Sometimes players develop. In fact, most players fully develop after they leave college. I was thinking about how every team in the SEC has got a couple of pitchers now with the velocity. They've got a couple of pitchers who may not be all that great in terms of statistics and pitching in games as a collegian, but 3 or 4 years from now, they may be in the big leagues. You know, as their bodies mature and as their mind matures and as all that stuff begins to click. But Papelbon was, I mean, you could tell he threw hard. I remember he was a big guy. And, you know, you knew he was going to have a shot, but you never imagined it'll be quite like it was.
He just had a little dog in him. We've seen that with just the way he pitched. And I was going to ask him, I held, maybe this is for later on since we kind of developed a relationship there about the Bryce Harper thing with him and Bryce going at each other.
But my point is you don't see that all the time in college.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It does develop as a big leaguer and as they, you know, as they grow up, essentially. But there's a lot of guys. There's guys pitching in the College World Series. We've got guys we watch pitch for Arkansas this year who are going to be like that. And I think there are a couple of them on the Razorback team right now that have not had great success yet as collegians, but they got big league stuff. Yeah. And when it clicks, if it clicks, kind of like it did for Papelbon, they got a chance to pitch for a long time.
That they do. So we asked him at the tail end about the 2004 ALCS between the Red Sox and the Yankees, where Boston came back after being down 3-0. I want to talk about the comeback tonight. What is the best comeback in sports you see? It could be Razorback related. It could be National Rail. We'll get into that in just a bit.
Are you ready to give your family the best 4th of July experience yet? USA Fireworks wants to make that happen. Go to hitthatline.com/USAFireworks and enter for your chance to win a $1,000 fireworks show. It's $1,000 wholesale fireworks worth more than $2,000 retail. Again, hitthatline.com/USAFireworks. The USA Fireworks banging giveaway, courtesy of USA Fireworks, ESPN Arkansas, and hitthatline.com.
Hey, sports fans, don't let plumbing issues throw you off your game. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric is here to tackle those pesky drain blockages and ensure your water heater is always in MVP form. With Pascal's world-class service, you can count on a winning play every time. Whether it's a quick drain clear or a water heater touchdown, Pascal's got the expertise to keep your home running smoothly. Stay in the game and leave the plumbing to the pros. Schedule your service online anytime at gopascal.com. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
I have not watched 1 second of the Stanley Cup Finals or the NHL playoffs, but I'm going to watch tonight as the Edmonton Oilers try to do the unthinkable, the unfathomable, come back from 3-0 and beat the Florida Panthers. It's in Florida. And later on tonight, well, it's 7 o'clock on ABC. So Chuck, all that on one TV after the College World Series. The game has already started about an hour before on ESPN between Texas A&M and the Tennessee Volunteers. But I was thinking about, and we kind of talked with Jonathan Papelbon about this, who gave some great stuff in this last segment, about some of the better comebacks in sports history. Like you could talk about specific games or specific series. Kind of the one I honed in on because of not just the physical aspect, but the personal stuff too, was Tiger in 2019, what he was able to do to come back and win. I know that it wasn't necessarily on the course that weekend that he had faced like 10 strokes back or anything, but just everything he went through personally And
that's the first comeback you think of?
Well,
when someone thinks great comebacks, that's the first one you think of?
I had some others. Like I had, we mentioned the ALCS with Jonathan. Cavs being down 3-1 to the Golden State Warriors and coming back. Patriots being back down 28-3. I didn't know about the Buffalo Bills and Frank Reich.
I think of the Frank Reich game. I think of the Patriots being down. There have been some, for some reason, you were talking about great comebacks. I think that's going to be your question. I don't want to
No, you're good. That is the Morning Rush Daily Question.
jump in front of you there. I can remember some of the old timers can maybe remind me. It was maybe 79, maybe 78, 79. The Razorbacks were playing basketball against Houston at Hawthorne's Pavilion. And I think the Razorbacks were down like 20 points, and I was watching the game with a friend of mine. We were like in high school. And I can remember, you say dumb things when you're a kid. And I said, if Arkansas comes down and scores right here, we're going to come back and win the game. And Arkansas came down and scored, and I think they cut it to like 19. And, of course, I spoke with the confidence of a prophet that Arkansas was going to come back and win. And by God, they did. Sidney Moncrief led them back, and they came back and won. And I remember there have been other great comebacks. I'm not saying that's the greatest, but that's the one I remember. But I do think about that Frank Reich game, and I think about being down 28-3 in the Super Bowl, coming back and winning that ball game.
He threw like a pick six to start the second half, dude. They're down like the Patriots. It's 28-3. Then Reich, I guess, threw that pick six, so it's a 32-point deficit. And it's not like it wasn't Jim Kelly. I mean, he's their backup. Like we're saying, it was Frank Reich, and they came all the way back. So that was
It's Frank Reich's claim to fame.
Yeah.
Right? If you're old enough to remember, if you remember that game, all anybody's got to do is say Frank Reich, and that's what you think about. Mm-hmm. I mean, his legacy was cemented that day. All it takes is one day.
All it takes is one day. I am partial to 2004, but I felt like that was kind of the easy answer because we just talked about it. So I went a roundabout way with Tiger, but I think it is pretty impressive for everything he went through personally and physically to get that done at the age he did. But reading up on the Bills, cause I wasn't alive when that happened, but I did think that was, I think that was pretty impressive. This Chuck, if they were able to pull it off tonight, it would be the second time ever in NHL history. Go back to 1942. The last time it happened for a seven-game series to end the way it could possibly deny.
I will admit that whenever game six was, Friday night, maybe, I forget. My point is, I checked on the score, maybe for the first time in my life. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch because I don't understand the game.
Yeah.
I just don't. I will freely admit that. And I'm not denigrating the game. I'm denigrating myself. I don't know the game. So, I did check on the score, though. I'm not going to watch tonight because you basically got Game 7 in college baseball tonight. They're both deciding games. They're both winner-take-all. But I'll check on the score, if not tonight, tomorrow morning. And that's probably the first time that's happened. I couldn't tell you who won the Stanley Cup last year. I couldn't tell you who won it the year before. I have no earthly idea. But I wasn't even sure Miami had a hockey team, to be perfectly honest with you. But you're right. When a team has a chance to come back from 3-0 and win it in Game 7, it grabs your attention.
Pretty crazy. So we'll see if it happens tonight. Again, it's later on at 7 o'clock. You've got College World Series Game 3, and Game 7 is, some like to say, the most exciting phrase in all of sports. That is your Morning Rush Daily Question. What is the best comeback that you've ever taken? One more, Chuck. It didn't end up coming to fruition, but 2004 Florida, you should have won that freaking game. It was a late hit at the end from Tony Bua that may or may not should have been called. He didn't end up getting that win, but I still remember being angry at Ron Zook as he walked off the field that day. So that still ticks me off all these years later.
This hour of Chuck Barrett on the Morning Rush is presented by Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric. Professional people, professional service. Schedule your service appointment today at gopascal.com.
It's a good question. Again, our Red River Dodge Morning Rush Daily Question brought to you by our friends at Red River Dodge in Heber Springs, Arkansas's number one Ram dealer. Chuck, we've got the NBA draft this week to look forward to.
Woo-hoo.
I'm excited about it. I want to see who goes where.
Now, you said that like you almost meant it.
Well, I didn't think about it from the perspective of, like, you've got Dillingham, you've got Shepard, you've got Justin Edwards, you've got Antonio Reeves. Like, Cal is, even with Arkansas, is not going to have a player drafted for the first time, I think, since 2018. There's no one that's going to be drafted off this last year's team. But Cal's still going to be the center of attention, even with Kentucky guys. And I think, again, you're going to see the name on the crawl, Arkansas men's basketball coach, which, even though it's Kentucky players, you're still going to get some benefits and dividends from this week, I feel like.
Who's going to draft Bronny James? Anybody going to draft Lakers going to draft him?
57? I hope not, man.
What if Phoenix drafts him and LeBron ends up there? What if they go back to Cleveland, man?
Go back to the Mavericks.
Go home. That has been such an over... We kind of talked about this with I know you're tired of Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese.
I didn't say I was tired of it.
Okay. Well, by the way, Angel Reese in Chicago win by one. It's a good game over the weekend.
Did you watch it?
No. not a second. But
a lot of people did. I noticed it was... I think the overnight numbers are pretty good.
She had like... Angels had like 8 straight doubles for the game. But back to your point, I'm just so sick of hearing about LeBron and Bronny James. I mean, it's tiresome.
Averaged almost 5 points a game as a collegiate tie. Of course people are talking about him. Star.
I don't want to, like, because he did have a heart issue, and I do want to be, like, cautious of that. But, Chuck, it's one of the biggest storylines, which is frustrating. It should be more on other things. And I know draft, like, you think about draft night stories. Like, I think about the New York Knicks and I don't think it was a frozen envelope. I just think it was bent. I think that's how they ended up with that.
It was fixed.
Yeah, I do. 100%. All these years later.
Now, why do you think all these years later? How old were you then? Like 4?
I wasn't born.
Okay. So, like, did this just, like, what?
Intuition, man.
What, is this like watching JFK and you decide that the movie about the JFK assassination is just adopting all the theories that were shown in that movie?
I look at the envelope and how it's bent, and I say, Stern knew. He knew. That's right. I feel that all these years. But you think about that. You got Sam Bowie being picked over Michael. Reggie Miller over Alford. Dirk was booed by the Mavericks fans when he got picked.
Yeah, they were Sears, weren't they?
Yeah. But this is a fun week. You just had the championship parade in Boston, which I know Boston fans are excited about their franchise and what they can do moving forward. But I think about what it's going to be for Arkansas in years to come. Like it was last. I mean, it's going to be more like last year, Chuck. And you think about Jordan Walsh going 38th, Nick Smith being in the first round, AB getting drafted by the Orlando Magic. That is what you have to look forward to for years to come under Cal, is being the center of attention. And Arkansas is already tied for, I think, 8th with Kansas with the most NBA players from college. And that number is only going to go up, I believe.
I would imagine it will, and there's certainly a lot of evidence to indicate that's going to happen. You have to win along the way, too, you know, or every fan base wants to win. They take pride in their players being in the NBA, but they trade it all for a national championship.
Yeah,
I mean, let's 100%. Be honest. But you don't get the national championship without the players that go into the NBA. So, I mean, it certainly works together. It's nice being the center of attention. It certainly is. And sometimes fan bases are so excited about that they forget everything else. The thing that I'm encouraged about with this basketball staff is that while we, and by we I mean all of us, are thinking, man, you know, this is awesome. We're the center of attention now. No, we're really not. Cal is. And Cal's our coach now. And so, you know, we get to share the spotlight and be part of the spotlight too. But ultimately, you've got to win. And I think that's their approach right now. I think that's why we've seen him do some things a little bit differently, maybe in terms of the way he's assembled his roster. You know, we talked about the way you assemble your lineup at the end of the baseball season. We talked about it because Van Horn talked about it first. So it became a talking point. I think when you look at what Calipari's done with the Arkansas roster, it's different than what he did at Kentucky. So what that tells me is not only are they concerned and still always thinking about getting guys to the NBA, changing lives, they want to win championships too. And they look at the teams that are winning championships, and they look at the way their rosters have been assembled, and the ages of the players and the blends of the ages. I think there's a plan to win, not just put guys in the NBA, but put guys in the NBA who are coming off a Final Four appearance. That sounds even better.
Speaking of a plan to win, have you figured out who you want the New York Knicks to draft? I'm looking at OKC at the number 12 pick, and kind of maybe who I'd like, maybe someone that would
draft. Best player out there.
Best player out there.
The best player available, hey, seriously.
Nothing wrong with that.
I mean, there's nothing wrong. There's never anything wrong with signing the best player available. People get all caught up in needs. Oh, we got to have this. We got to have that. You sign the best player available, wherever you are, and that'll probably serve you better than anything.
I think, Chuck, before we move on, this is a future NBAer. Have you got a chance to see the Oliver Rue kid for Florida, 7'9"? Have you seen any videos of him?
I have not seen any video of him, no.
When we go to break, you need to
look. How does he move?
He's 7, more like Zach.
Like someone who's 7'9"?
Yeah, less than Zach
Eady. Like there are a lot of people who are?
Yeah. He's not Wimby. He's not Chet Holmgren. But he's now the world record holder for the tallest teenager. And Arkansas, I think, has to play him this upcoming season.
Well, I mean, everybody will, if just by being 7'9", he's going to attract attention. Hey, this is one of those weeks where, man, it sure does feel good to know your AC is going to work. If you're a Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric customer, you know that. Because they have been, if you're part of their plant protection program, you know they've been there all year round. They've made sure that everything's working, whether it's been the dead of winter or whether it's been as we move through spring and now as we're into the heart of summer. And it'll change as we move into the fall. We'll be talking about different things then. The point with Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric is you've got the peace of mind of knowing that your home, number one, is always going to be comfortable. Number two, you're not going to be hit with a lot of costly repairs that you did not anticipate. Or you're going to spend a night in a hotel because your air conditioner is on the fritz. And you'll have to leave your house if it goes on the fritz right now. Call them. Set an appointment. Get the peace of mind that so many have. They've been in Northwest Arkansas for over 50 years. If you can hear me now, wherever you are, they're expanding into your area if they're not there right now. Check them out. Schedule an appointment. GoPascal.com.
Real quick, before we move on and hit a break, I saw John Rothstein had the news that Arkansas is going to play Central Arkansas in Little Rock this upcoming season. Doesn't have a official date for the matchup, but Chuck, we continue to get tidbits on the schedule, and that's kind of another. You've been playing in Little Rock, I think, every year since either 2011 or 2010, with the exception of COVID. But it sounds like you're going to play the Bears this upcoming season in Little Rock, according to John Rothstein.
I think that's a great opponent. I think it's perfect for that setting. I'm glad they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be, you've got the marquee games already, your setup. Don't know when that's going to be 100%, but you think about the different games like Illinois and Kansas City, Miami and the ACC-SEC Challenge, and then also Michigan and Madison Square Garden.
It wouldn't bother me to see Arkansas basketball rotate UCA, UALR, bring A-State down. We'll play them. I think that, and that's just my opinion. I'm just speaking for myself. I think you could play an in-state school there every year. I think it'd be good.
They would definitely fill up. Not that Little Rock games aren't highly attended to begin with, but you might add a little oomph to that
game. I think it would elevate the sport. I think it would be good for the sport in all corners of the state. That's the reason I don't think it's a bad idea.
Nope, I wouldn't disagree with you one bit.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris George from Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas gifts, weddings, heirloom family treasures. And at Joshua's Fine Jewelry, we only have one sale every year, and it's right now. Every single item in our store is value priced for Christmas. We do custom one-of-a-kind jewelry. If that's what you're looking for, come see us. You can get anything fixed for a Christmas gift. Selection, quality, service, and Christmas red tag prices now through Christmas at Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville.
Have you tried Benville Brewing's new Space Goose Hazy India Pale Ale? It's handcrafted in Arkansas. You'll taste the great tropical citrus, including the passion fruit, the guava, and pineapple. It's creamy, zingy, and zows the taste buds. It's weird, wonderful, and wacky all at the same time. Try the new Space Goose Hazy India Pale Ale from Benville Brewing.
So we got Game 3 of the College World Series tonight between the Aggies and the Vols. Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Finals. Had some golf this weekend with the Travelers as Scottie Scheffler won his 6th PGA event of the season of his 12th career. He's been dominant thus far. We got 67 days out till football. I know people are wondering, hey, what is Arkansas football going to be in 2024? It was a disappointing last season. You're hoping for a better 2024. And starts with your quarterback, Taylen Green. Eric Galco is going to join us momentarily, get his thoughts on what Arkansas has. Does a lot of scouting, does a lot of player personnel for the East-West Shrine Bowl, which is a combination of a bunch of seniors that will move on to the National Football League. So we'll get his thoughts momentarily on your starting quarterback amongst some other players, but it is a Hot Take Monday. All right, let's welcome in Eric Galco on the McLarty Daniel Hotline again, the Director of Football Operations and Player Personnel for the East-West Shrine Bowl and does stuff for Optimum Scouting as well. Eric, appreciate you joining us. Start with Taylen Green. You've got a chance to watch him on film at Boise State. What stands out about Arkansas starting quarterback this fall?
Yeah, a lot. I think he's physically and athletically extremely intriguing, and a guy I think a lot of NFL evaluators, as well as I'm sure college teams, want to get their hands on, just because there's so much raw potential and so much raw upside there. And you certainly look at the raw stats from Boise State a year ago, and you see 11 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. What are we getting here? But really, that Boise State offense, I'm not sure really got a chance to really uncork what he can really be as a quarterback and as a dual threat player. I think his upside and the flashes he showed, not just as in terms of athletic ability, arm talent, all that stuff, but winning from the pocket, play progressing, making decisions off script, it's all there to really make huge, huge strides. I think for an Arkansas offense, there's some similarities between he and KJ Jefferson. I think KJ Jefferson certainly has more starting experience, a bit more refinement. That Taylen Green, I think, has more upside, but similar style to what KJ Jefferson offered the last couple of years.
What can Bobby Petrino do for Taylen Green, Eric?
I think for what Bobby Petrino has done a fantastic job of his whole career as an offensive coordinator and play caller is he gives his really talented quarterbacks at times a lot of really easy decisions and a lot of schemed open plays to allow his quarterbacks to make easy throws, to keep the ball moving, and allow his quarterbacks to make plays when they have to or when the opportunity sets up. I think for Taylen Green, he'll have schemed open and scheme a lot of 80% of his throws will be really easy decisions for that offense. And that gives Taylen Green the comfort to know that, hey, I'm not going to be put in a bad situation to have to force a play or to be overly creative in a play. But also when the time comes, when it's third and medium or it's first and 10 on a long drive, Taylen Green knows, hey, this is where I get a chance to be my Lamar Jackson in a Bobby Petrino offense and really make a downfield throw or work off script or get out to the pocket and make a defender miss with my legs or break tackles to the second level. So I think for Bobby Petrino, he's going to make Taylen Green's life as easy as possible. When those opportunities come, Taylen Green is ready. He's not stressed, and he can really take advantage of those opportunities the defense may give him.
Eric Galco is our guest. McLarty Daniel Hotline. He's the Director of Football Ops and Player Personnel for the East-West Shrine Bowl. Also does stuff for Optimum Scouting. Eric, I think one of the other benefits Taylen has is while he didn't play with these guys last year, Andrew Armstrong, Isaac Tesla, you got Luke Haz coming back from injury, Isaiah Cetania. They return, I think, 93% of their pass-catching production. Yeah. How do you think he's going to be able to utilize guys that haven't necessarily been at the system but have all been on the same roster as of last year?
Yeah, Armstrong and Tesla especially are two guys that I'm excited about to see again just because they were transfers a year ago, and I think we kind of underestimate sometimes those small schools to FBS transfers maybe takes a year to kind of get settled. So if the receiver room is deep, I'm excited to see him kind of stepped up there. But you're right in that he's going to have a lot of weapons to throw to. And I think he'll get a chance to kind of figure out who he works best with in this offseason. Coach Petrino and that offense will figure out, hey, who are the best quarterback around him consistently too. But then you add in the fact that they've got a good running game still, and Jaquinnon Jackson coming in from Utah is extremely talented and has out-of-the-backfield potential. They've added 3 reinforcements on the offensive line, including Carmona at left tackle, who has a chance to be an NFL player as well too. So they've really kind of fortified a lot of key depth, that running back, receiver, offensive line. Certainly, Luke has coming back, as you helpful at Titan as well, too. A lot of pieces. We'll see who kind of arrives at the top and is their number one, number two, number three option. But I think Kellen Green will not have a shortage of opportunities to kind of make plays downfield and keep driving in with this kind of depth of offense and the offensive line talent.
Eric, you bring up Jaquinta Jackson. I really liked what I saw on film from him at Utah and what I've heard out of him from spring. What kind of dynamic do you think he'll provide to that running back room along with a guy like Rashad DeBinion and then also the young Braylon Russell amongst some other guys?
Yeah, Jaquinin's an incredible athlete. He's dealt with some injuries at Utah, and they had a deep running back room when he first got there. But this is a guy coming out of Texas that was an incredible quarterback, dual threat athlete prospect, and it's a high football IQ, a guy who's played a lot of football in high school and just didn't get his chance to really explode at Utah like the program thought he would, and I'm sure like he thought he would because of injury and the depth they had there. But he is immensely talented. This could be a guy that we could say, hey, this guy is 1,200 yards by the end of the season, all-purpose as a running back and receiver. Big, athletic, can move in space, can make guys miss, can develop even further as a pass catcher. He can stay in on third down and block as well, too. He's kind of a I think he can really be the face of that running back unit, but also allow that depth to really thrive because he's a guy that I think, when healthy, he can handle 15, 20 touches a game.
We're talking with Eric Alko again, kind enough to join us on the McCarty-Daniel Hotline. Eric, Arkansas's going to have to play this Alan Bowman kid for Oklahoma State. That's, I think, is in his seventh year of college football. It's annoying because not only that offense has got Ollie Gordon, all the pass catchers, all the offensive linemen, but you got a guy that's been around the block forever. We've talked about this being a problem in college basketball, to an extent college baseball, but what do you think about like trying to cycle out some guys out of the COVID years and out of the eligibility? Is this a big problem for college football as well?
I think we're almost through the COVID headaches that certainly college has gone through. As an NFL evaluator, we've gone through being like, wait, who's eligible? He can go back to school. I don't know. So I think we're almost through that. Hey, for Alan Bowman, a chance to come play in college football when, hey, maybe the NFL is not going to be there for him. Kudos to him and the Oklahoma State program. I know it's happy to have him as well, too. But I think we're almost through that. And I think it's, in some ways, it's benefited a lot of true freshmen that may have played in bad situations. And one of the aspects of transferring is we see guys struggle. And it's okay when we see guys transfer when they're backups and not playing and a new coach. When we see a guy struggle and then he has to transfer, it's kind of selling low on himself. And it's never really great to see those kind of guys. So I think more and more seniors, especially at quarterback, staying in college, allow those younger quarterback chances to develop a little bit and kind of see what's going on for sure. Oklahoma State has a good young quarterback, a couple of good young quarterbacks behind Alan Bowman as well, too. So I think the whole of college football is probably improved by having more seniors stay and a lot of those young guys to develop. But I think for a lot of people, we're thankful that the COVID year is almost behind us and won't be any more seventh, eighth year seniors, at least for a little while.
Eric, you mentioned NFL evaluations. I wonder if you could give us some thoughts on Landon Jackson's, Arkansas's probably best defensive player, maybe their best overall player, a kid that had like 3.5 sacks. I mean, he wrecked Alabama's game plan in Tuscaloosa last season. Yeah. How big of a prospect does Arkansas have from Texarkana at the next level?
Yeah, I think I feel pretty confident in saying most people believe he's their best prospect for next year. The guy, I think Kalen Green's upside is really intriguing. But Landon Jackson's a guy that NFL evaluators know. I know he a little bit considered coming out a year ago, just kind of did his homework, but really wanted to stay in school and kind of improve his value. And hey, I think if he was in last year's draft, third, fourth round was probably where he was going to go, maybe a little earlier if he tested well. You had another year of refinement, a productive year, and now every, not only NFL scout, but now NFL GMs and coaches know his name coming into the year. That kind of expectation, if you can rise to that level, that's where kind of first-round prospects are made. So not saying Landon Jackson's a first-round pick quite yet, but he's got that talent. He has the awareness of the NFL scouting community, again, at the highest level as well, too, that, hey, if he can put together a 7, 8, 9 sack season this year with how much attention he's going to be getting and what their scheme really asks, that's going to put him in rare company across the country this year. Eric, no doubt he'll be one of the best defensive lineman prospects for sure.
Eric, I wonder your view on the Southeastern Conference with Texas and Oklahoma joining as of next Monday. Those additions, I think Texas is going to compete right away, unfortunately, for a lot of Arkansas fans listening. I'm not as high on Oklahoma. What kind of impact do you see them having on the conference? I still think it's Georgia's for the next 5 years, depending on what happens with Kirby. What are your views on Sark and Venables instantly joining the league as of a week from now?
And Sark and Venables are really different. I think a Sark-led team is somewhat, I mean, Sark's done a fantastic job of building the top-end talent there. I think the last 2 years, especially, he's built the depth that a Georgia and Alabama have, right? People underappreciate sometimes that as good as Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State are at the top end of the talent, the first-round pick, it's the depth that they have that allows those guys to stay fresh, allows those games maybe or blowouts to have guys come in, allows the practices to be successful. And I think Sark has gotten that to Texas the last 2 years. But now they have the depth. We'll see if that depth can really match an SEC schedule when there's maybe two games that are a little bit easier versus four or five in the Big 12. And that'll be a big deal for the Texas program. I think Oklahoma, to your point, I'm not sure they're ready to compete right now. But again, Brett Venables done a great job of building a lot of depth and keeping that offensive line of strength, keeping the defensive line of strength. Jackson Arnold there at quarterback, he's certainly intriguing for them as well, too. So I think Oklahoma is a little more of a, they're going to build within the SEC versus Texas has high expectations coming in now. But I don't expect Oklahoma or Texas to be below the mid-tier, if not in the upper tier of the SEC moving forward. They're both going to be strong programs. And again, they've really built enough depth in recruiting the last couple of years and the portal to not be someone who's just going to be banking on a couple stars, but have enough depth to compete.
Eric, we'll let you go with this, man. Again, Eric Galco, our guest on the McCarty Daniel Hotline. He's head of football operations with the East-West Shrine Bowl, which incorporates a lot of senior players that, like Tom Brady, for example, that have played in that game. For Arkansas fans listening, they're looking at two giants entering the league, two bordering states, right, that have higher in-state talent, that have more of a national brand than they do currently. And they're just wondering how they compete in this league that has even been, not revamped, but just it's tougher now than it's ever been. What is the pathway for Sam Pittman, not just on the recruiting trail, but to navigate the already tough SEC to compete in this conference?
I think it's a great question because I think with NIL being almost a level playing field and not just money, Arkansas has opportunities to have a lot of money for NIL and really compete, maybe not dollar for dollar on every player Georgia, Bama, Ohio State may recruit, but they can get pretty close when the program's in a good spot. But I think it's about recruiting strategy in the portal and keeping guys there. I think Arkansas has done a great job of kind of the guys they want to keep, putting together realistic proposals, keeping the players involved. I think the culture of Arkansas right now from a player standpoint is really strong. And that's what you have to a lot of players now coming out of high school are just viewing college as not only 3 years and go to the NFL, but 3 years of good money and development because they know that they can get paid a lot of different places. Where can I get the most money when I go to the NFL when I leave as well, too? And I think Arkansas and Coach Pittman have really developed that we can produce and help you get to your NFL career pretty consistently. And I think doing that at a consistent level is how you go from a mid-tier kind of struggling to float to being a really consistent powerhouse. And Arkansas has those resources. I think if they can get to that level of being a consistent 8, 9, 10 win team, produce NFL talent, compete with a big guy, win a big game or two every year, you'll start to get more consistent depth and talent in there for sure. Again, 30 years ago, Oklahoma was struggling a little bit, and they kind of brought it back based off tradition, but also building that depth. And I think now with NIL and the program Arkansas has, it's even easier to build depth if you have a really good process internally, and I think Arkansas does.
Eric, we'll leave it there. Again, Eric Galco, Director of Football Ops and Player Personnel for the East-West Shrine Bowl, also does a lot of stuff for Optimum Scouting. Appreciate you joining us this morning on the McCarty Daniel Hotline and excited to see how Talen Green is for Arkansas in 2024.
Yes, sir. Thanks, buddy.
All right, good stuff from Eric. And Chuck, I've actually paid attention to a lot of national guys and scouts like Eric. They seem of the opinion that Talen's got a pretty high ceiling. They've seen flashes here and there at Boise State. I know it's a tougher conference, but they're excited to see what he can do under Bobby Petrino at Arkansas.
Well, obviously for him, this is a really important year. It's important for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. Mm-hmm. But for Talen Green, it's an important year in terms of, you know, is he going to continue to play football after this season? And if so, where? And how much is he going to get paid to do it? So, yes, I think for someone like Talen Green, there's a reason why he's here playing for Bobby Petrino, and you know, we'll see how it works out. I know they're glad to have him, and he's the one they wanted.
Chuck, I think an underrated aspect of this offense, and maybe it's the biggest thing going for it right now, is the while
The offense was not good last year. I think we can all come to an agreement on that. You do return 93%, I think, of the pass catchers, which you think about Luke Haz, you didn't get a good chunk of the season due to his collarbone injury. And that's a big deal to get all those guys back, even in a different offense, just for continuity's sake.
I think getting Luke Haz back's the most significant thing that's happened to the offense, more significant than getting Taylen Green to transfer from Boise State, and I say that respectfully. Luke Haz is the best football player we've had in a long time. Pick your side of the ball, pick your position, I don't care. I watched a lot of him over the years. This guy's the real deal. This guy's a ball player. This guy can change your team regardless of which position you decide ultimately he needs to play. I'm glad. Now, I'm not saying Luke Haz makes you a playoff contender. I'm not saying that. I'm saying he's the best player on your team, and that's my opinion. And I think that having him back, I don't think you can overstate the significance of the importance of having Luke Haz back in this offense. I don't know that this would have been a bowl team last year if he'd not gotten hurt, but I know when he got hurt, their fate was sealed. And all you had to do was watch the first few games to understand that when he went down in that ball game, it was like, oh, gosh. John Calipari's talked about this in a basketball sense. He said, hey, man, you lose the wrong guy, your season's over anyway. Arkansas lost the wrong guy last year. And I know football's there's a lot more guys out there, but I think having him back's really important.
One of the things Chuck also brought up with Eric is Alan Bowman. There's some quarterbacks that you just know because they play in the SEC, like Jackson Dart, who you'll play again this season. I know you don't have to play Jaden Daniels this year with him departing for the Washington Commanders, but this kid's in his seventh year for Oklahoma State. And we've talked about this. I feel like it's been more of a basketball conversation as of late. And you kind of heard Eric allude to, well, COVID's eventually going to cycle out. But I just wonder, like, we kind of talked about it last week. I still think we're going to see a lot of this in the NCAA because the Pandora's box has been opened to a certain extent. And now you have to deal with it playing against a quarterback that is going to steady one of the most veteran offenses in college football in week number two.
Well, as we said last week, I mean, why would a kid want to leave?
Yeah.
Why would a kid want to leave? I mean, if you're just on the basic plan, let's say you're a college football player, you're just on the basic plan.
The basic plan.
You know, you're a part-time starter. You know, you're out there every day. I don't know what you're bringing in a year. It might not be $100,000, but it's pretty close. Where are you going to go to work right out of college? I mean, right out of college. Where you're not going to miss a beat on the lifestyle that you suddenly enjoy. There aren't many places you're going to be able to do that. You're going to try to stay as long as you can, is what I'm saying. And the catch-22 of we want to help change the lives of student-athletes is going to come on the back end when you basically say your time's up and all this money that we've been giving you, it's over. It's going to be like getting laid off. It's going to be like getting furloughed, like a lot of employees got during COVID. They're going to get furloughed. And, of course, they want to stay. I'd want to stay, too, if I was there.
It's a lot of money to be making still in college. And, yeah, like you said, not going to make that money once you graduate and actually move on to
the room. Ty, you think about it. If you were a college student and someone said, Ty, I'm going to pay all your bills. I'm going to pay all your tuition. You got no living expenses at all. And I'm going to give you $100,000.
You take it.
Absolutely.
You take it.
This podcast has been presented by Bet Online.
This podcast is an exclusive property of Pearson Broadcasting. It may not be copied, reproduced, modified, published, uploaded, reposted, transmitted, or distributed in any way without Pearson Broadcasting's prior written consent. Subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network, the best podcast in the Natty State. Just search Hit That Line wherever you listen to podcasts.